Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have a fun show lined up here. We have Cliff High coming back. We're going to talk about cryptocurrencies and finance and, you know, the change of the deep state and governance. And then we're going to get into fun technology and all sorts of interesting things as we dive into. This is actually a three-part series. We had a lot of fun talking. First, it gets pretty serious. We talk about what's going on with the government and the dollar and cryptocurrencies. It's, you know, it's serious, but it's he calls it a new renaissance, which I agree. There's a lot of positive feeling out there on where things are going, things being cleaned up, lots of positive things. And then we're going to get into technology and kind of out there stuff on the edge of what is going on, and also some interesting ancient understanding and Antarctica, what's going on down there, which is absolutely fascinating. So let's get into that interview now with Cliff High. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall.
Hi, Cliff. Welcome back to the program.
Hello. Well, Very nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you back. We haven't talked for a while, so we have a lot to talk about. Let's dive right in. You just have a new report that came out all about cryptocurrencies and other things. So we're going to dive into a lot. Plus, I've heard you talk about other things in a couple other shows that I want to dig into further. So I'm going to go there as well. I hope you're okay with that.
Sure, but that's fine. Yep.
But let's go. Let's start talking about your report. Although your report has plenty of heavy material, right? Your reports are always pretty heavy because it's, you know, emotional content. You talk about collapses and scandal and things. But it seems like the overall world is trending towards a more of a rebuilding and reforming healthier foundations. I think it's a positive response from the realism that they're seeing from the alt media. Is that a good assessment? Or
I don't know that that's a cause, but it certainly is a symptom. But I actually put it down to the 40-year bond cycle and the fact that it was headed down into zero and they have no way out. And as a result of the cryptocurrencies arising all those years ago, we now have a way out. And the natural nature of humans is that their enthusiasm, the entrepreneurial spirit now has an outlet. And so there it goes. And there, you can't restrain that. Once you let that horse out there, you're not going to catch it again. And that, I really think, we can just state it this way, that the humans are, in fact, that we're all bursting out emotionally. We do have a much more positive attitude about things, especially here in the USA empire. And this is in spite of the very realistic news that to a certain extent is mostly negative. And I'm not talking about the stuff that's purveyed by the panderers in mainstream media, but rather, you know, the real reporting on everything that's going on. But in spite of all of that, I find that indeed all of the emotional trends within our model have turned. They've all picked up. And what I actually put it down to is that we were trapped as a species, actually, less so in China and even less so in Russia, but we were trapped emotionally by the 40-year bond cycle going down to zero interest rate and not being able to turn. Usually when you got down to about 1 or 2 or 3% in the past, which were really extreme periods, you would have the bond vigilantes come on out and they would basically reorder society by being astute enough to take vast quantities of wealth from the idiots that were running things. But the idiots that are running things these days have it so locked up with high frequency trading and total manipulation of all of the debt-based cycles that we've been very, very, very trapped for all these years. And I think it impressed on our psyche, and it's gone now. And that, as regardless of what the cause is, we can state that we can see the entrepreneurial spirit is bursting out all over. And I personally think that this is a very good thing and symptomatic of where we're going to be headed for the next few years. We are rebuilding, and it's in spite of the crumbling of the giant financial debt empire around our ears.
But I think the crumbling maybe is why we're rebuilding. It's like, wow, now we see like hints of light that things can happen. Plus, there's like a tsunami of new technology and new opportunities coming our way.
Manifesting quite right now. And it's interesting because we're seeing this in very advanced software as and not AI. I mean, I hate that term. It's really misleading.
I agree.
not that at all, but rather the very sophisticated, the pushing down of software into the sensory level so that we're now getting that much more input for all of our machines. They're that much more efficient. Everything lasts longer. And so we're seeing this technology come on out. Plus, we're seeing all kinds of new technologies at an industrial level that are emerging. And so it's kind of like there's a whole new machine tool industry forming up behind us. And this machine tool industry will be delivering products to the masses. And it's kind of like if we turned around and looked, we could sort of see something analogous to those people that built 3D printers. Okay, so there was an industry that had to form in order for 3D printers to come on out. But once the 3D printers actually did come on out, you could actually use your 3D printer to build another 3D printer if you wanted, which is kind of a funny way to look at it. But so we've got that appearing as well in other kinds of industry niches, and that pressure, there is actually a demonstrable manufacturing pressure that is exerting itself on a lot of different systems around the planet, and we're picking up on this. You know, I mean, there's a certain amount of it where we're feeling this, and especially in the excitement at the software level of the cryptocurrencies and so on, but it spreads out. A couple of the cryptocurrencies that I'm aware of are being used to finance some very ambitious device build-out firms. And we also have to understand, too, that software has now given us an efficiency that never existed before. So not only are the entrepreneurs busting out now, but they're not going to run into this barrier of the big banks. Because most people don't understand this, but as a small business person, I've actually gotten to the point where I had to consider an IPO years ago in the 90s. And the idea was quite disheartening because of the huge amount of rake-off that the banks took on the process and how they were basically screwing the entrepreneur and that company as well as the people that were buying into it on the other side.
They often take 50% of the money, right?
I mean, I was quoted 65% in the 90s. That's how much would disappear into the banks as a result of this. And I said, wasn't worth it to me. I couldn't have all those people on my case if the stock went up and then immediately crashed because the banks had come on in and basically had a giant rake
that
took 65%. Yeah. And then
because think of how much more prosperous we could be if they took a reasonable 10%.
And, 3 or 4.
Oh, yeah. 3 or 4. I was being generous from 65. Yeah. And that all went to investing in the future and our entrepreneurs and our people.
Or, doing stuff instead of just paying banker bonuses so that they can snort it up their nose, you know?
Yeah, yes. Skimming off people doing work. So exactly, Gandhi said that was the worst criminal.
The worst crime on the planet. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're busting out of that. This is really cool, okay? From my perspective, within all the woo-woo data, it shows us going into sci-fi world. And the thing about sci-fi world is that we may have giant corporations and we may have huge centralized power structures, but we're not going to have empire-dominating kind of things. And so it'll be a whole lot more like fractured and open and chaotic. But this is all good for regular humans because it gives us that much more breathing space, that many more opportunities to get at things, and we don't have this idea of a central oppressing authority that gets so entitled on its own that it feels its first and primary job is to protect its turf at the cost of even the turf itself, which is all of us, right? And so it was very much self-defeating. And empires, when they die, it's an ugly process. And unlike the death of the British Empire before us, the death of the dollar empire, we now have its replacement being built by those same individuals that used to wholeheartedly or even half-heartedly put their effort into maintaining the empire. So many of these people are bailing on it now that the entrepreneurial gates have burst open and they're saying bye-bye banking and all of that. I'm out to do honest work, you know, that kind of thing. And it's a
it gave them a release, right? Because they didn't like it either. But that's, they had to go with the pony that was the strongest at the time, or the only pony in the show.
And the ones that that they were actually being herded towards anyway. I mean, they were, everybody was forced into the system. The system was self-containing and self-compressing, so to speak. And it's broken open. And it had to break open because they cannot allow that 0% interest rate to rise. If it rises beyond a very small amount, then the entire debt system comes unglued. We've recently been told that it's now over $2 quadrillion in derivative debt, and growing at an increasing rate each and every month, such that we'll reach the third $3 quadrillion in less time, in about a third of the time that it took us to reach the second. And so it's an accelerating process. So it is in the process of collapsing. Now, the good news from my perspective is that we are bleeding it out at the same time that it's collapsing. The last empire, when it collapsed, there was an abrupt shift over to U.S. Dominance in the world financially. Now we won't have that. We're not going to have an abrupt shift to China dominating the world rapidly financially, although it does and it should, just based on population and history. But what we'll see rather is the loss of centralization, and decentralization is now arising. And decentralization means we're all our own bank. It means we got to be adult about this. You know, the no nanny state, no one going to take care
of
you.
That's possible, but yeah.
yeah. So we've got to grow up, but at the same time, in growing up, there is huge amounts of opportunity that did not ever exist before, or has not existed, let's say, in hundreds of years.
Well, I think if we grow up, we can solve so many of our issues, right? I mean, it's just
yeah, we bring
a lot of
them
our
on
issues
ourselves.
Is just growing up. But you talk about secrets exposed. People crawling up from the secret holes, much like the fall of the Soviet Union. So, but more entrepreneurial is what you're talking about now. But what do you mean by the secret holes?
Well, here's what's going on. And I'm writing about this in the next Alta report, which will be out at the end of this month, because there's so much data about it. We find ourselves in sort of the same situation as the collapse of the Soviet Union after the White Revolution that Yeltsin ran. That was the sort of the second collapse. But at that point onward, the entire financing system for their state government fell apart. And so you started hearing rumors. It was really pre-internet at that stage. Excuse me, the internet existed, but we had yet to get into HTML. But you heard rumors about Soviet scientists had this or whatever. They'd smuggled this out of the lab and they were trying to sell it. And of course, the worst rumors of them all was the Soviet scientist who had smuggled out a nuclear bomb that they were going to put into a suitcase, yada, yada, yada. But in any event, the pathway was there for them. Now, in the United States, as our empire fails, we have these things called special access projects. These are the projects that they don't even tell the president about. They don't even, some people in Congress probably know they're funding them, and they've probably been told some lie about what they're supposed to be, and that's about as far as it goes. So we don't really even know what they're working on. But we do know that there's for every Russian scientist at the height of the Soviet Union that was working on a deep, dark project, we have 88 scientists working. 88.
We have a lot of deep state money going in that
exactly
direction.
Huge amounts of trillions of dollars being stolen.
Yes.
Well, and they're going to keep stealing the trillions, but the good news for us is that it's not worth much anymore. And so as we all exit the dollar and start dealing in cryptos, these people are strangling, they're dying, and their funding is shutting down. And it may even be seen visibly in the slowing down and lack of chemtrails. I think they're running out of money to pay for it.
Yeah, people are saying they haven't seen chemtrails in months.
Yeah, we've had bizarre weather here because we haven't seen a lot. There was some today, but I haven't seen any for weeks. And in the Puget Sound area, we're a gateway to most of the northeast and the southeast of Canada, because they would blow the form up over here and allow them to blow across the Great Plains and stuff. But they've even shut those down. But getting back to the other point, though, the scientists. We're going to have people crawling out of these secret access projects that have a pension that's just gone poof because the government entity isn't even going to acknowledge that they exist because it doesn't have to. and the pension wouldn't be worth much anyway because it's denominated in U.S. dollars. And so a lot of these guys are going to be in the same situation as the Russian scientists in the 80s, and they're going to have to sell things or tell things in order to make money. Now, the good news for them is we're all so desperate for something that's close to the truth, we'll pay them.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be able to set up, you know, cryptocurrency donation pages or sales sites, you know, come and buy this nifty-difty little thing that we reverse engineered off the space alien spaceship here. And you know, it's a replicator for, you know, making infinite number of shoes or whatever. I mean, I don't know what they're going to be producing, but they're going to be hauling this stuff out. And our data sets are talking about next year as being basically the beginning of this flea market. Really, wow. What's going to be? It's going to be an international global flea market as all these people come on out and have to say things. And it's because the government's going to go through a big, or governance, okay, not our government per se, but the idea of governance being paid for by a central bank is going to hit a hard wall here in just a few days. I think that the first real indicator we'll have will be around the 24th or 25th of August. And then we'll hit another part of it in September 5th. And from that point on, it starts getting even harder on them. And basically what it comes down to is the lack of the bond vigilantes to turn the bond cycle back means that it's not going to be turned back and it's just dying, which means the dollar is dying and it means the debt system itself is dying. As a result of the way in which it's structured, government needs a continuously, our personal federal government, USA government, needs a continually rising stock market Dow indicator in order to be able to be healthy. And it can keep that thing going up to about 50 or 60,000. But now the purchasing power that is netting in this weird little incestuous loop with the central bank is going to result in something that is barely marginally adequate. And so bits and pieces of government, according to our data, are going to fall off. And it'll happen like there might be some earthquake in Alaska or up here in the Pacific Northwest as a result of the eclipse that's coming up next Monday. And so after that, maybe in that process of that earthquake, maybe we get a couple of dozen roads or small bridges in national parks that are simply damaged to the point they can't be used anymore. Around here in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of these bridges are not cement. They're built out of steel or in some cases, giant, huge logs. And so they'll be damaged. And the federal government will be told about this some point after that effect, sometime in August or September. And at that point, the government will look and say, well, okay, that's fine. Close the park. We don't have the money. We're not going to be able to repair it for 10 years. And it'll keep going like that. And they'll start saying this about all different kinds of things. Usually it'll be background support stuff that'll go first. And we'll see it just like it happened with the Soviet Union in that regard until all that's left is the facade and then it all comes crashing down.
Well, Trump just closed 7 government programs. So is that the start?
But it also may be their a proactive attempt to avoid a lot of this by choosing what you're going to shut down, right? Because we know that there's such huge amounts of waste in government. And the estimate on the IPOs for banks is pretty much the same on government, I think, okay? The actual cost of doing an IPO in the 90s when I looked into it would have been about somewhere between 3.5% to 4.5% realistically, and that would have allowed within that about a quarter of that amount for profit. And so a huge difference between that and 60%.
Yes.
I think government is at that same level in terms of it's a balloonness, so to speak, in terms of how it spends. And so they're going to run into some extremely hard walls here as their income flattens or decreases. And we'll see it at the peripheral levels because there's so much that the federal government does not pay for directly, but is in charge of signing the check on. So in other words, outside of their main funding sources, a lot of these departments have special funding arrangements where, you know, I don't know, maybe trees harvested off of a particular part of a forest or sand or gravel or something, that money gets fed back into the support of that national park system, those kind of things. And as those are impacted, the government won't have the a real ability to buy new stuff. They can print more money, but with fewer and fewer people taking it, fewer people working, the general collapse of the overall system, they don't have the energy, basically human energy, human capital, to get it together and get this stuff done. There is no positive feeling about it, and so it would tend to languish. The shutting down of some of those departments or agencies or subsections of the government, I think at this stage, is an acknowledgement of the realization that this is already ongoing, and it is an attempt to prune as they go. It happened with the Soviet Union as we watched them collapse before the appearance of the second revolution with Boris Yeltsin and those guys. So, for instance, the Soviet Union used to have all of these, Cuba. Before the Soviet Union collapsed, they cut Cuba off, sending Cuba into a crisis because 92% of their income vanished overnight, and they had to really react. And so Cuba, in that sense, was a national park of Russia, and they just couldn't afford it anymore, and we're at that stage as well. And we see it in the degradation. So you can see it in 40-year-old buildings, cement and iron structures and steel structures that are decaying and that are government institutions that are simply not being maintained. And so there's huge amounts of deferred maintenance everywhere, potholes in roads, all of this sort of a deal. But this gives us all something to do as we're working through the chaos, is to fix all this stuff.
Well, yeah, our foundations need to be fixed, but we need to manage it in a much better, solid way instead of just... The problem is the siphoning off of money and the criminal, completely disorganized and not managed well. But beyond that, so much of it skimmed off from corruption and the deep state. I mean, you can't run anything like that.
Right. It's like the parasite that kills the host. You know, it's not a good thing for either one of them, and it is occurring. Who can stand a 60 or 80% rake off on your daily take, so to speak, the amount of energy you put out? You can't.
Mm-mm. No business could survive that.
Yeah. Without... And when they try that kind of stuff in the Middle Ages, the peasants realize, no, I can't live on those few potatoes while you get that ham. So, you know, it's revolution time, guys. Yeah, no choice.
Exactly. We're hitting walls here where we're being forced. That's what happens. You're forced into a situation just to survive. So you're saying that the full-blown Renaissance revolution will be in full production, you call it, by 2020. I think this is positive. I really think it's positive. As long as we realize that we're aware of it and we make sure it goes in a positive direction and not the chaos can come out where all the dust settles and some of the wrong guys are holding the bags, right? So right. We gotta be smart about this. But when do you see the clearing, or when do you see the clearing starting to happen? When will we reach peak? You say 2020. You know, when will the
ahead. The peak of it would probably be in terms of the emotional energies that are showing within our data sets would be like December through March 2018 into 2019. Okay, that would be, at least insofar as USA Pop, which is my largest emotional segment that I trust the data from. So it'll be that will be our peak here. But emotionally, it's already winding down in some levels and picking up in others. It's difficult, for instance, to maintain an analogy. It would be very difficult to maintain the French Revolution and, you know, the chopping off of heads of the royals and all of that, that emotional tone through your country at the same time you were having a rip-roaring industrial revolution that was generating vast quantities of wealth. Okay, the two do not go together. They sort of did at the time what occurred was the industrial revolution came into the French Revolution, and then they ran into the hard wall of the royals taking off all of the money. And it led to the French inventing a word they called sabotage, which is wooden shoes thrown into the machinery to make the machinery stop working and the whole factory comes down. And sabot was a wooden shoe they used to wear. And so we're past that, though, actually, in this particular instance. So our peak, our revolution is already underway. And it started in 2005 or 6 or so, and then broke out with the cryptocurrencies. And the cryptocurrencies were just so weird and so out of the mainstream. They upset a lot of people, but a lot of the people in the upper echelons didn't see the threat. Now it's too late. The dollar is being eaten by the cryptocurrencies, and that is our outlet. And so that is our hyper-industrial revolution that's going to be ongoing at the same time that the old system crumbles. So I actually expect, and the data seems to be confirming, that a lot of the people that might otherwise be out in the streets throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails are in fact going to find that the people behind them are getting siphoned off and doing real work and making money. And it's like, hey, you know, come on over here and join us. Stop throwing rocks. Come on over and, you know, we'll put another shrimp on the Barbie and show you how we do this, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, it's so healthy getting to the point where people are working and producing things and doing. I mean, that's the building the foundation. That's what you're talking about, Renaissance. That's good.
It. Yeah, that's the renewal, both emotionally and then at an infrastructure level. And then once we've got that, then, well, it'll also occur at the same time. But the ongoing, I'm quite, because of the weird things I look at all the time, I'm privy to information about all these strange kind of devices that are being built and new technologies that are coming off of them. And so I've got this theory that may have some grounding in fact, and that was that most of our current technology and the technology you and I are using to communicate derives from reverse engineering space alien spaceships that we shot down in 1947, and that we actually actively shot them down with analog radar. And pretty much since then, we've abandoned the idea of analog anything, and we're into the digital world. And it's taken us 70 years to eat through that level of technology, and now it's spread out into the globe. And we have it in our cell phones all the way up through the microphones and everything here. And so it's kind of like, okay, I jokingly said in this article, well, now it's time to turn that radar on again and shoot down some more of these critters to start us all over again, right? but I actually think that it's probably not necessary. I think there's a secondary stage that's ongoing in what we might think of as these industrial tool machines, so to speak, machines that are designed to build other machines for mass distribution. And I'm pretty sure I'm seeing that secondary level out and about getting built out. And so that would argue that we're going to have another flush of incredible new technologies over these next 4 or 5 years. And that, so to a certain extent, it's, you know, not even 1999 again relative to technology. And we're seeing this especially with the cryptos, the adoption of them, the impact of software on the rest of our social order. And now it's eating money, which is it's eating currency. And that's one of our primal emotional hooks in our lives, especially here in the American Empire. And so the fact that we're there tells me that, yes, the Renaissance is here. It's being augmented by technology. It'll run at the rate that technology does through society, so it has a predictable adoption curve. And once you plot where you are on the curve, you can figure out where the rest of it's going to be. And we're about to reach the pushing out into our social order of the second wave of this. And I know that second wave is coming because I see the machines that are going to produce the machines that we'll be ending up using. And so I'm actually quite, I get all excited. It's just, it's sci-fi
well,
world
it's
is just so cool.
Incredible. Well, the nanotechnology is incredible too, because they can get to the building blocks of material and then mess around with that and then print that out.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's a side, I think it's a dead end cul-de-sac.
You do?
I actually,
why?
Because nanotechnology has an inbuilt inherent limitation, and that's the size of the atom. Not that they can't manipulate atoms, but nanotechnology, you can't send command and control instructions to it except through an electron. Mm-hmm. We don't have any other method of manipulating lower than an electron. And so we can't make devices too small. We can make them, but they can't receive instructions because they're too small and the electron is so large it doesn't effectively do anything for them. So that's one aspect of it. But also, look at what it's supposed to do. One idea is in science fiction is that you'd maybe have a handful of these guys or something in a glass jar, and you could go and pour them onto a thing of a rusted old metal, and maybe these nanites would recreate the metal into shining steel or something for you, right? And so they would work at that atomic level. Well, again, atoms are a cul-de-sac. What's really underneath the atoms is the energy. So how much cleaner to just make what we need directly out of energy and not even involve ourselves with the nanites?
Just
draw the energy up through a template that makes it into a turkey or makes it into a Tesla car or a cell phone.
And that's when I'm thinking nano, I'm talking small. So you're saying, okay, we're gonna get really small. So yes, I agree with you.
No, and actually it's called field technology, or I'm calling it that. Okay,
because
it
shows the base, the core, the very building blocks.
Right, exactly.
Yes,
The energy itself, and we can actually tell this energy just right at that point, just before it's going to decide to become an atom, we can say, no, we don't want you to be a hydrogen atom. We'd rather you be iridium or a helium.
Be to be able to, now, having that power, we need to be grown-ups.
Right. That's another thing. Right. These guys know how to do, they know that this power exists because of these reverse engineered things they've had to create. And they're really scared of letting it out because we're not as mature as they think we ought to be.
You know what, though? I kind of agree with them. If we're having all these wars, and we have to evolve as people to be able to handle that stuff. And we can't have psychopaths have it in their hands. And we have, what, 1 out of 21 people are psychopaths? Yeah. So, you know, we have a little bit of an issue, evolutionary issue.
Yeah, that's right. All of our cousins don't play nice.
Exactly. Not everybody's good on the playground.
Right, right. And there are some that, you know, they want to dominate and all of that. But there's also I focus a lot of attention on these energies from space because humans react to them. Okay, so because we're energetic antennae. And so we are going through a period now that is actually the last of or the waning part of a energy cycle that we can plot that goes back to about 1942. And it relates to the sun and solar cycles and this kind of thing. And the sun is now calming. And because it's calming and it's going from 5,000 degrees down to 3,000 degrees Kelvin, as a side issue, we're going to go into an ice age, okay, at some degree. But part of that calming is actually a change in the energies that come around the sun and get back to us here on Earth. And these energies include things like cosmic rays. So we'll see more precipitation because cosmic rays cause clouds. And so chemtrails may not be needed in the future simply because the cosmic rays will be doing this for us, creating huge cloud layers. Plus, cosmic rays also are coincident. Causal or not, they're coincident with a lot of volcanic activity. And so the volcanoes will be putting up stuff and we won't have to necessarily do chemtrails. However, that same level of cosmic rays it's part of a symptomatic of a greater amount of energies that are coming on back that we will feel and react with and be part of. And we can't separate ourselves from. So we can't separate ourselves from being bombarded with a certain amount of X-rays constantly when we're out and about. You can get in underneath the caves and this kind of thing, but in general, you're not even aware of them. And these energies we're unaware of, and they're going to be influencing us for the next, you know, several hundred years, probably 425 or so, in a various different frequencies. But the good news is, in my understanding, that the energies that have been causing all of the heightened level of contention and the bifurcation of everything at every different level, the tendency to harden up, those energies are waning. And in fact, I think we passed the peak of them sometime in July based on some of the readings I've been able to get out of SOHO and stuff. It's still a little dodgy. I'm still working with this in terms of plotting all of these things. But I am of the opinion that for sure we're waning out of those. Whether it sort of was the turning point in July or not, or it'll show up in September, I can't say for sure. But we should all feel it by, I would think, November or December. Things ought to be a lot more calm, and thus the positive side will also be able to get that much bigger of an impact, so to speak, because there isn't that much pain over here to eat up some of that. Right.
Well, yeah, that would be great. Much more healthy state. Well, we're so affected by the electricity and everything going in and out of us. You know, I had an interview with Wallace Thornhill, the Electric Universe, and he was talking about, you know, just if science could start to embrace these theories, which are proving out in labs, you know, the Electric Universe, we would have a much better idea on how we react to all the waves and signals and everything our technology has put out instead of us just blindly putting stuff out. We could create a much healthier environment for ourselves, and so much of the problems would start to wane. And if the sun's doing that as well, that's huge.
Well, it's not the sun so much. It's the energies coming around it because its corona is actually shrunk. And so there more stuff is able to slip around it as it's pushing through space. But basically, yeah. And see, it would be very huge if science would accept this. Science is a religion insofar as it's paid for these days. And so they can't step outside of the dogma. And we notice that people therefore have to do this on their own. And so if you look around, you can find that people are not necessarily, or you find lots of people bitching and moaning about all the electromagnetic radiation. And they're saying we shouldn't use this and we shouldn't use that. And that's a nice natural outgrowth. But what I was looking for and did find was this whole thinner layer of people that are saying, okay, we've got them now. How do we deal with it? And so you see people that have come up with some really cool ideas, such as copper strips that go inside your shoes. Very thin, that stay in contact with the sole of your foot, that come out through the shoe and then form a grounding pad on the bottom of the shoe. And so you're constantly able to ground out the energy because most of us are insulated now. In the past, we would be walking barefoot. And so leaving the electromagnetic radiation spectrum aside, just the natural spectrum, the cycle we're in is a 400-year cycle. About 420 years, it lasts for 125 in a lull, then another 425. And so we've had this as humans repeatedly through millions of years because we've been around on this planet for a long time. But when we're barefoot, a lot of these energies just ground out. We're just totally unaware of them because they pass right through us. So the idea of grounding out a human, the idea of, you know, sheets that have a copper thing that goes on out and grounds into the ground, this makes a lot of sense. And you feel better if you take your shoes off and you go walk on the sand or on the grass or this kind of thing, right? Especially, you know, in early spring, you've been trapped you've got cabin fever, you've been in the buildings all winter, you're going out, there's sunlight, you're going out to the park for the first day, take your shoes off and mush your feet around into the grass, and you feel better for days. And it's because you've been able to shed the negative ions and the positive ions that have built up disproportionately. So, yeah, it'd be nice if science, if people in, well, especially medicine, would wake up to how we're actually constructed.
Yeah, medicine is a huge part. I mean, cancer, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, I have so many things I want to talk to you about. Okay, let's dive into cryptocurrencies a little bit more because they're breaking out in full steam now. I mean, we've seen huge gains. And you've already really explained this, but Bitcoin has split recently. And I'm hearing that it, you know, they had some scaling issues and the splitting has to deal with the scaling issues as well. But then people are saying that it's less secure now. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I don't see it as being less secure at all. The hashing algorithm hasn't altered. And people have to understand that if I was a Bitcoin miner, and I'm one of maybe 20,000 Bitcoin miners. You know, I've got a PC here that's mining the blockchain and doing all the transactions and so on and creating Bitcoin. If I was one of them, I could split the Bitcoin blockchain on my own. I could alter my own code, and thereafter I would have Cliff's Bitcoin. And maybe I would be the only person mining it, and everybody would say, well, you're foolish, and it would just disappear. But I could do that. So the split is not as dramatic as a lot of people might make it seem. It's not particularly effective. I think it's really good because we now have been able to separate out the underlying technology from the wealth that it was holding. Bear in mind that if you bought Bitcoin, if you had one Bitcoin 7 years ago, that one Bitcoin or $1 worth of Bitcoin 7 years ago would translate to $1.14 million now. Okay, so that's how much appreciation we've had, or how much the dollar has died relative to Bitcoin. Okay, in 7 years' time, it went from $1 worth of Bitcoin being, you know, this much Bitcoin, but that much Bitcoin now is worth $1.14 million.
Now, how did you have any Bitcoin then?
No. I started accumulating and getting a little tiny bit. It was awful hard to get. Unless you were a miner or knew people that were mining it, it was difficult to get before there were exchanges and so on. So I actually got some Bitcoin before Mt. Gox even originated. I've had some since 2012. And so, no, not 7 years back, but 5 years back.
Well, that's still really good.
Yeah. And it's done well for me. I mean, I'm, you know, Bitcoin been very good to me. So I don't have to have anything to bitch about there. But this is nothing compared to where it's going to go. It's estimated that only 0.015% of the populace of the planet is even aware of it.
Yeah, they even know what it is.
Correct.
So now, do you think Bitcoin is a better? I know you can't give investment advice, but I'm going to ask your opinion. Everybody knows he can't give investment advice, so don't come back and sue us. But is Bitcoin a better investment than silver?
Yes, especially in the long run. Okay, but there's going to be a flash of stuff for silver as silver busts out next year. And it's going to have to do with these technologies. And then we're, according to the way the data shows it over a period of time, what's going to happen is Bitcoin's going to keep scaling up. And then in 2020, the halving occurs. Traditionally or historically, whenever that happens, within a month or so, Bitcoin doubles in nominal dollar price. So in 2020, if Bitcoin is at $1 million each or 100,000 each, it doesn't matter what it is, it'll double relatively soon thereafter. Silver, on the other hand, is going to have go through this little bit of breakout in its prices relative to things now. But then in 2018, there's going to be a number of silver, not backed, but silver facilitating cryptocurrencies. And these are going to really bust it out because at that same time, we're going to have all these new industries that are going to be very silver dependent. And so they're going to want to secure silver prices long into the future, and they'll do so by buying coins now. So there will be a point for a number of years that silver is a very good investment. It won't rival Bitcoin because the forces acting on them will be different. But there will be a time when silver will appreciate, and silver-based ICOs or coins will appreciate much faster than the Bitcoin itself. But that period of time will be relatively brief, especially considering Bitcoin's long future.
So basically, silver will be good for a shorter period of time, but Bitcoin will be great for the next, I don't know, right, how many years.
Exactly. It's an underlying store of wealth. It's always shown up, even in our data sets back 2 and 3 and 4 years ago. It showed up as being the vehicle of settlement between countries or very large transactions.
Okay. Let's talk about blockchain then. How secure are blockchains? Can they be cracked?
Blockchains are protected by hashing algorithms on the individual transactions. So the idea that you could crack the blockchain would imply that what you were after was a generalized tool that would allow you to decrypt the hash on any given transaction. To develop such a generalized tool to crack the SHA-256 algorithm would be extremely difficult, and it would be an effort of many years and lots of money and or an absolute brilliant idea out of the left field. But even if you had that, it doesn't aid you. You can't crack the transactions within the blockchain. Most people think it's like this, okay? Most people think that the blockchain is sort of like maybe a train car or a bucket brigade or something, and the bitcoins are put into the buckets, okay? And so that they think of the blockchain as being this transport system for the transactions that, and they also think that in their wallet, they've actually got, it shows up, you've got one bitcoin. And they think that somewhere in that wallet, there's a number one in a column and a designator for a Bitcoin there. It doesn't work that way. In your wallet are actually transaction codes. And so your wallet is composed, you actually have Bitcoins, but your Bitcoin is composed of the addition of this line in a blockchain and this other line, and they're being funneled over to you, and that equals your Bitcoin. And so it's actually the sum of these two transactions. It's always the sum, even if one of the transactions is negative. So basically, your wallet is filled with the sum of sums, and then it goes through and tallies that and makes, and so it has all these transactions, and it keeps a record of all of the transactions. So you don't actually have anything that can be transferred out or cracked out of your wallet.
And it's all distributed, right? It's all distributed.
Correct. Correct. And they couldn't spend it because of the double spending rule. So no, you can't really crack it that way. And so getting to the idea that you could crack the SHA or any of the algorithms, any of the hashing algorithms using quantum computers, you could. I would argue at this point that that first off, quantum computers are not deterministic. So to aim it at a particular kind of a cracking is going to be very difficult, might require days of programming.
Well, isn't quantum computing just really weird? I mean, we don't even really know. Do they even know what they're doing? You know, I mean,
they don't know what they're doing. They're approaching it from a scientific perspective that doesn't acknowledge the nature of reality that we're in. What they're doing, I can explain in a number of different ways because I come from a woo-woo perspective. It's very apparent what they're doing. And here's what's going on. there's nothing that you do, or there actually is something that your mind does right now that keeps Sarah's fingertip, the atoms at the end of Sarah's fingertip, from merging with her microphone when it picks it up. Okay, your consciousness creates the cohesion that keeps this finger, and microphone. Your consciousness does this. And if that consciousness was not present, there would be no, every time you touch something, you would lose part of your finger, or your finger would become metallic as it brought over some of the other stuff, there, because atoms would just merge all the time. But atoms can't really merge because of the nature of the energy underneath them, again, controlled by consciousness. Now, here's where it gets into the woo-woo part. Right up here in British Columbia is where they're manufacturing these qubit computers. And they build computer chips that are highly advanced and really on their own, they're kind of spooky anyway. Then they put these computer chips inside a vessel. It's sort of like putting an ink cartridge into a pen. And then they take this pen and they push it into a bigger vessel. And inside that bigger vessel, they've vacuumed out all the air. They've chilled the thing down to where the atoms are not even vibrating because they're keeping it really cold. And they're doing everything they can, every single thing they can, to push out consciousness. Okay, that's their entire goal. They, in fact, when you work on these things, you have to go through this little ritual, basically, is what it amounts to, of doing these specific things. And it's to get your consciousness out of the way so your consciousness does not damage the equipment you're working on. And this is a well-known effect that's been ongoing since the 90s. When they started doing some of these quanta experiments, they would find out that they couldn't have a student sit there overnight monitoring these things because the consciousness of the student would affect it.
Well, I don't even know how you could get your consciousness away from you.
I can explain that, but it'd take us a while and we'd have to go off in it. But there's like 26. There's 26.
We'll just leave it at kind of like a movie where my husband's always saying, just go with it, Sarah. It doesn't make sense. Okay.
There you go. Yeah. Just follow the plot. Right. Let's not go down there. Yeah. But basically there's 26, quanta effect. And, by doing it, most often in our reality, we're only ever going to see four of them. But if we really, really worked at it, we could look and see some of these other 26. But what prevents us from seeing the other 26 all the time is that our consciousness gets involved. And they discovered this with students in science experiments, basically. And so these quantum computers go to a lot of trouble to push away let's just call it the woo factor, okay? The consciousness factor that's throughout all of reality. So think of what that means. It means two things. They're creating a consciousness or a woo-woo vacuum that they're sticking the chip into so it doesn't get altered by any of this stuff going on, and thus it can do its quantum stuff. But that also means they're making it more dense by literally pushing it away and maintaining that consciousness absence field with all of their stuff constantly. So they're sending out ripples into consciousness continuously as they operate these machines. And so it gets spooky around where these machines are put. And every one of these machines that I've seen placed creates a center for Mandela effects. And you can plot it from the very first ones that were placed at NASA in Texas. We had Mandela effects showing up in that area, interpreted by the largely fundamentalist Christian population in its fashion with all of the changes to the Bible. You get these things put down in California near Google, and you have the quanta effect, Mandela effect showing up in the New Age group.
So, explain what this is. One of the questions my listeners wanted me to ask you, David, specifically, the deal with the Mandela effect. Explain what that is and then keep talking about it.
Okay. Now, Mandela, the Mandela effect is named after a screw-up in newspaper reporting, okay? Mandela did not die. This other guy, Stephen Biko, died, and it was misreported that Nelson Mandela died. That went around the planet, and then most of those newspapers at the time in the 70s did not ever report the correction. And so I remember reading that article, and then I remember reading 3 days later, oh, no, it wasn't Mandela that died, it was Stephen Biko. And so that was the situation. But it's now become, it's really even, gets even really spookier because before that existed, okay, before the case of mistaken identity with Mandela's death, several years before that, I think five, there was actually linguistically recorded Mandela effect phrases being used. And we can't now track down what it was being used in reference to, but it existed before the effect. So indeed, maybe these quantum computers are causing time ripples. And I think that actually what's actually going on is that it is not a case of our own memory distortion unaided. All right. So I'm of the opinion that there may indeed be memory distortion, but without these quantum computers, the Mandela effect would not be widespread and might not even be named or known by us. And that I think that what they're doing, because they're pushing out all this consciousness and temporal disruption into the local environment, that it's spreading out and affecting our consciousness and our memories and stuff, because we're energetic antennae. And all of a sudden, if you live near these areas, you get this weird, different energy. And I don't know that you can feel it, but there are a lot of references by the people that have to maintain these machines that indeed you feel them as you walk into the room when they're active.
So and what would be a Mandela effect? You use some examples, but can you go back
sure.
and use some argument and say how it worked? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the Oscar Mayer thing, okay? There was a little song, Oscar Mayer did this song, and it was, you know, M-A-Y-E-R or M-E-Y-E-R. People remember it both ways. I remember it one way, my wife remembers it another way. I swear that my memory is good, she swears her memory is good. We can't reconcile it, and it's that way all the way around. You see it showing up in movies where you, and songs, you know. Recently I saw one come on up, what would you do, or what would you blank if I sang out of tune, right? What would you do if I sang out of tune is how I remember it, but it's what would you think if I sang out of tune? If you go and look at the lyrics now, okay? But all through my life, I've always... Now, it doesn't mean I didn't misremember the lyrics and so on, but it is possible that my memory, my connection to my memory has been altered by the proximity and essentially is being affected by this. If this is the case, I think it's somewhat self-correcting, okay? If I'm correct, we'll get up to the point where we have enough of these quantum computers out there that enough people will become involved that the society will become affected at a level that might induce dysfunction. And thus, we'll all start pointing fingers and saying, what's going on here? And maybe we'll shut down quantum computers because they were a bad idea. Just like digital watches, you know, we shouldn't be doing that, that kind of thing.
Is deja vu connected to that at all?
That's a natural occurrence that is an emotional reaction to a memory, okay? It's a deja vu all over again, but there's also presca vu, seeing ahead, as opposed to seeing twice, and so on. So there's all of these. These are historically known. They have that emotional component. The Mandela effect also has that emotional component, although it doesn't necessarily involve the same initiator of those emotions as deja vu, right? But it actually does go to that same emotional level. And that's how I was able to see the Mandela effect without even really understanding what I was looking at. Within the data sets, I would see that people were in fact becoming aware of and reacting to emotional disturbances. And then eventually I was able to track it down and it aggregated and it grew over time. And then I was able to plot it to the locations. And then I said, okay, what's going on in those locations? And I find in every one of these hotspots, there was a quantum computer placed, or it was a laboratory where quantum computers were designed. So for instance, the quantum computer industry, if you will, began in the Northeast around Boston. And that's where we also have specific Mandela effects that relate to that area.
Now, what are the quantum computers? What are they trying to do? Just have instantaneous processing power just so much faster? What are they trying to do with it?
They've run into a problem, okay? Google and all these other guys. We have so much data now that deterministic brute force machines can't get through it. So, for instance, Google indexes how much of the internet would you think?
3%.
If they're lucky, they get maybe 3%. And even at 3% of the internet, that's pretty much beyond their limit for effective search. So even without their, even if they were going to be 100% honest and not skew the search towards their advertising partners and all of this, if they were going to be 100% honest, they're only going to be accurate on about 60% of all of the searches in terms of how they've defined accuracy, okay? And their definition of accuracy is bringing up, in a broad way, I'm going to redefine their stuff, but is bringing up a search result you want to see within that first page or two. And so they ran into this problem. They could run these machines, generate vast amounts of heat from these things, doing calculations, and still get no closer to providing better search services, right? Or even managing the data. And so we just hit this huge data volume wall. And there is no getting around it from a deterministic viewpoint. If you've got to step through billions and trillions and trillions of rows of data, that chip is just going to take a while. And pretty soon you find out that once you reach a certain level of indexing on the internet, just to do one search would take 24 hours because it would just looking through everything, it would just take 24 hours. And that's with indices, that's with everything they can do. So quantum computing comes along. And the idea is like this. There's a particular arrangement in the flake of steel in this 12-foot or 12-inch by 12-inch piece of steel that's a quarter of an inch thick, that's of a known purity, that has these little flakes in it that you can see. And if we do something to this plate of steel, heat it up, and then cool it at exactly the right minute, it'll lay out exactly the row we need to go to get that search 100% and bring up that thing you want to see in the top line, okay? And it's because all the molecules are moving around in the plate of steel while we've got it hot, and then we freeze it at just the right moment, and it points to just the row we need. And we don't know how it does it, but in order for it to do it, we got to shove out all of the consciousness effects and all of that. This is called quantum annealing, okay? They actually do this, quantum annealing. They also do quantum tunneling. They do quantum linking and all these others. There's the four ones that I was talking about out of the 26 quantum effects are the ones that they're trying to use. These are the crudest, okay? These are like the fire and the water. I mean, we're like really crude with these things at this stage. And quantum annealing is their attempt to do this. Now, here's the downside of that from their viewpoint. It's only going to be successful 80% of the time. That is to say that you know, for 20% of the time, it's going to fail miserably and not yield the row they want, and it'll give you a bad result, and you go off somewhere you don't want to go. But the beauty of this is that if you can get this thing working, you only have to do it twice, and you'll get the perfect search result because you've eliminated going through all those billions of rows. One of these things is bound to be, basically, it's bound to be accurate and get you the result you want. So it'll be kind of a weird search. You go hunting for white rabbits, and it'll show you just the one link you want to have, and then something totally, you know, white rabbits from the greater region of the Pleiades or something, you know, just something really off the wall, because the other one will be totally wrong. But they won't have to do any deterministic hunts or any of this, and they'll be able to do this. Now, the problem at this stage with quantum computers, it takes you hours to program one of these annealing states. It might take a day to run it, for all I know. It takes huge amounts of energy. We're just starting this and just getting the very beginning of it. And that's why nobody ever need to worry about quantum computers being used to crack blockchain or any of this. Not only would it be stupid because there'd be nothing there to get out of the cracking effort, but quantum computers don't work that way. If you're going to ever try and get the hash cracked, it will be with a very good deterministic machine and a very good programmer. And we could do it with, you know, modern day tools, but it'd take you a long time and it's probably not worth the effort.
Well, I know China's been working on it for a long time. They're trying to crack that cryptocurrency, the SHA.
256. Yeah. Well, okay, you hear people talking about that, and I've seen a lot of attribution of some of these Chinese firms as being involved in that and some Chinese individuals that are being involved in that. And as near as I can tell, I don't think they're actually doing that. I think they're trying to find a replacement, the next grade up, see, their own version of that, if you will, because the encryption is highly valuable on the internet, extremely valuable. And if you can come up with a very fast, secure form of a new kind of a hash that is, you know, it has to have all these characteristics, memory efficient, space efficient, and so on. But if you can get that, it's worth billions and billions of dollars. It would be the next blockchain, so to speak, right? And that is a limitation. It takes a long time to do hashing effectively on lots of rows, and that's what the blockchain computers are competing around, is basically how fast they can do that.
Yeah.
That's the end of part one. We will have two more parts to the Cliff High interview. It was just too long to be able to fit into
the time that we have. But he's so interesting that giving him more time is well worth it. I think the next two episodes you're going to really like. So keep an eye out for that. And also, of course, all my other episodes that are up there at sarahwestall.com. And if you're liking these shows, please go to Patreon at Sarah Westall and support the show. Even a dollar a month really helps out a lot. Got some extra and you really enjoy the show, please consider donating. I'd really appreciate it. It'll help cover all the costs. So thank you so much and have a wonderful day.